Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Farming can be a tough business. Land and equipment are expensive, and farmers are at the mercy of the elements. Now the entire occupation is threatened by an aging demographic. The United States Department of Agriculture says that the number of farmers younger than 35 is increasing, but not by enough, by a long shot, to replace those leaving the industry. We're talking about the challenges for young farmers today, a focus of the 39th Annual Ohio Ecological Food and Farm Association Conference scheduled later this month. Joining us is Begin Farming Program Coordinator for the Association, Kelly Henderson. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And also by phone is Land Access Program Associate for the National Young Farmers Coalition, Michael Durante. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to join you guys today.
I guess if they have such a thing as a Land Access Program Associate for the National Young Farmers Coalition, that means that land is an issue.
Yeah, I would say that land for young farmers, land access is the number one issue. Every few years, our organization puts out a survey to our members and to young farmers in general. About 3,500 people filled it out last year. And according to that survey, the number one challenge for beginning farmers is land access. It's also the number one reason why why people who have gone out of farming after starting the career cite is the reason that they left.
Oh, really? A lot of new farmers don't come from an agricultural background, right? I mean, so it's not like they're in a position to inherit. And even if they were, some families can't even afford to leave the land.
Yeah, exactly. So also from our survey in 2017, we found that 75% of beginning farmers did not grow up in farming families and don't have that kind of access to land where it would just be inherited. But even among that 25% that did grow up on farms, they even cite land access as their number one problem. Those land transitions are not always cheap, and they're not always possible if your parents are still farming.
So, Kelly Henderson, how much of that is a part of the conversations you have in your role as Begin Farming Program Coordinator?
All the time. We're in a situation right now where a lot of our programming has been focused on helping farmers with production assistance and business planning, financial planning. And continually we are getting questions from beginning farmers about this land access issue, right? So think about it. If you're a livestock farmer and you are pasturing animals and you're looking to buy land, if you're looking at $12,000 an acre and you need 150 acres, for a beginning farmer, that's just out of the question. So this question keeps coming back up. You know, if you're going to start a farm, you need the land. And it's just kind of this circular effect of not having the money then to buy that land. And on the flip side, you know, we have a lot of retiring farmers who don't really have a plan in place to transition that land and often don't have family that are interested in taking on that land and don't necessarily have the tools available to them to understand how to transition that in an affordable way to a beginning farmer.
We're talking about the challenges that face beginning farmers, young farmers in this day and age. You just heard from Kelly Henderson. She's the Begin Farming Program Coordinator for the Ohio Ecological Food and Farm Association. This is going to be a focus of their upcoming conference in Ohio. Also with us, Michael Durante. He's a Land Access Program Associate for the National Young Farmers Coalition. Mike, how much of what you do revolves around matching up these retiring farmers with the new farmers?
Personally, and even at the National Young Farmers Coalition, that's not too much what we're doing day to day. We're more an advocacy organization, so we represent young farmers across the country, and so we're advocating to the federal government and state governments with our farmer members policies that could improve these kinds of structural barriers to land access, among other problems that young farmers have. And at the same time, we provide business services to farmers, so trainings like the one that we're doing at the OFA conference next week, so that we can teach farmers what are the strategies and the tools out there that they could use, even without policy change, to get on land more affordably. And we also train some other kinds of organizations like farmland preservation organizations and land trusts to show them different tools and funding opportunities that they can use to help farmers in their area get on land that they're trying to conserve.
Kelly Henderson, is matching old and new farmers something that works?
You know, I think the most important thing is getting them together.
Yeah.
First off, to build those relationships, because ultimately you have to have trust. You have to have that relationship built in order to transition that land. And really more than that, transition a business. So, you know, for instance, after the training event that we're having at our conference that Mike just referenced, Finding and Funding Your Farm, that evening we'll be having a networking event for land seekers and landowners, so that they can, you know, talk and figure out if it might be a good match to explore. I think that's just really important, getting them together face to face.
What, before we move on, maybe we should talk about what constitutes a young or new farmer. Who are we talking about there? How do you define that, Kelly?
Yeah, so the USDA defines it very clearly for us, anyone farming less than 10 years. And I think one of the things that we also know is that beginning farmers, they often are more likely than established farmers to be female, to be minority, to have off-farm jobs because they need that extra income. To have smaller farm sizes in acreage and in sales, and often they receive less in government payments as well. And you know, a majority, as we've mentioned before, have not been raised on a farm and don't have kind of that farm kid knowledge, and have to really build that. We also know that the majority under 30 rent land. So again, they're just not able to purchase land. They're forced into other situations that are maybe not as ideal.
Hmm. The female minority small farmers picture, Mike Durante, that sounds familiar to you?
Yeah, so that is definitely reflected in our young farmer survey, just as Kelly mentioned it. And just to add on, our young farmer survey, we surveyed people under 40 in farming careers. That's mm-hmm. sort of where we want to survey. And usually we kind of stick with the definition of under 35 as a young farmer, but that 35 to 40 range actually helped us out a lot in our survey statistics to show some other, you know, different paths. People that had, you know, not retired, but left farming careers after mm-hmm. Farming for a long time as a young farmer. But yeah, I support everything Kelly said there.
What's driving people into this business right now, Kelly Henderson?
I think a lot of it has to do with people wanting transparency in their food system, and coming at it from that perspective of, well, you know, I can start this, I can feed my family this way. And then we end up seeing people, you know, then feed their communities by growing that food and then selling it locally. So I really think it's kind of this local food system idea that a lot of people come into it from.
But we got away from a local system of food historically because it wasn't necessarily there wasn't enough profit in that. So they're willing to have a different sort of experience than the generation before them.
Yeah, and I think that's also another reason that we need to start looking at various policy changes to make sure that it is still sustainable and profitable for a smaller scale farmer to feed their local community.
So what would policy changes look like, Mike Durante?
Well, there is a wide range of them, and I'd say I can detail a few of them, but I think the best thing for people, if you want to read about our policy agenda, we've got the Young Farmer Agenda on our website, and it's youngfarmers.org/policy-platform, and that'll detail everything. But I'd say the top three that I could rattle off for you is, one is modernizing USDA services. There's plenty of services for farmers out there, both lending programs to get them on the land for the first time, and for people that have low credit, you know, specifically adapted to farmers. But those services you can't apply online for. Sometimes a farmer is expected to make a 100, 200-mile journey to their local farm service agency office in order to access those kinds of programs. And as you can understand, that is sometimes impossible for something in a farming career. Mm-hmm. That's one. And then the number one program that we found farmers utilize, that young farmers utilize, number one federal program is actually the Affordable Care Act. So jumping outside of agricultural policy, young farmers really rely on federal government for support, paying for health care, their working families, and even rely on their states and Medicaid expansion because there are a lot of working poor families that are farming. So those, and then also is paying for student debt. So as Kelly kind of alluded to, young farmers are disproportionately well-educated, which is a nice thing, but about 70% of young farmers that we surveyed have degrees beyond high school. But with that comes student loans. And, so one of the things that NYFC proposes is adding farmers to the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, which would help them pay off their student loans easier over time.
I would imagine that a lot of people get into it and then think about some of these issues afterward. They're driven by a passion, as you mentioned, Kelly Henderson, for more transparency in the food system and that kind of a thing. How many people are failing? A high number of them, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of people come into it really optimistic and maybe don't have clear goals and haven't done a lot of planning. And in that, 2 to 5 year period where you might be putting a ton of money into your business and then you're still not seeing that return, that's when we're seeing people exit farming. So it's really critical to support people during that time period so that they can continue and scale up or grow their business after that critical time period.
Yeah, the whole business plan idea, Mike Durante, how big of a piece of that does land access come into play?
So I'd say that's probably the number one thing mm-hmm. that farmers need to start doing when they when they're looking for financing and looking for land is just getting a plan together so that when they communicate with with possible landlords or farmland owners, what they're going to do with the land, what they're going to do with their business, they have like a solid foundation to speak from. And also when they go to loan officers and look for credit, that they know exactly how much money they need, that they've accounted to have enough money to actually start their business successfully, not forcing themselves to be getting off-farm jobs, but getting that credit in order to focus on their farming career itself. But all of that starts with the business plan. And when we do trainings, that is mostly what I personally focus on is both business planning and financial planning. It's the first step.
How do you plan for a business you've never done before?
Well, there are tons of resources out there for farmers. I would start with something that the National Young Farmers Coalition, our organization, puts out is the Land Affordability Calculator. So we have a website where people can go and for free, they set up an account. You could enter property information. You can enter some personal financial information and gives you all sorts of advice and case studies on land access stories and further resources that you could go to learn about financial literacy and then other tools you could use to make your business plan. So it's sort of a whole clearinghouse of information for people who might be looking to start this journey without actually having entrepreneurship experience or anything like that.
And locally, we are just wrapping up right now our Heartland Farm Beginnings program, which is a whole farm planning course that really walks folks through establishing their goals and their vision for their farm. And then we have, farmer leaders come in and talk about their experiences and teach business planning, and as well as other organizations that support farmers locally to come in and make sure they have the resources. And they will walk out of that with a business plan that they could take to a lender. So I think engaging in some of those trainings is really, really important early on.
Yeah, I would add just to echo Kelly that mm-hmm. the number one thing that people can do is talk to other farmers. And that's a big point of the National Young Farmers Coalition is that we have 40 chapters in 28 states. And when young farmers get together, talk to each other, learn from each other, that is the easiest way to learn in a comfortable environment and in language that makes sense to you with people who have had similar experiences to you. And that the Farm Beginnings program that OFA is part of is a wonderful formalized program for that.
Mike Durante, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Pleasure to talk to you.
That's Mike Durante. He is a Land Access Program Associate for the National Young Farmers Coalition. Coming up, we're going to hear from a couple of farmers, the local young farmers, to continue our conversation about starting a farm at a young age in the United States these days. There are lots of people doing it, but not enough. And the numbers that they need to replace the outgoing farmers, the folks who are retiring at the other end. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the obstacles for new and often young farmers who struggle, especially in those first years. The U.S. Department of Agriculture reports that fewer than one in four new farms earn a profit the first year. Still with us is Begin Farming Program Coordinator for the Ohio Ecological Food and Farm Association, Kelly Henderson. Kelly, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
The Ohio Ecological Food and Farm Association's 39th annual conference is coming up later this month in Dayton. For more information, you can check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Rachel Taze of Forage and Sown Farm in Central Ohio joins us as well. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Thanks for having me.
And Lindsay Teeter of Six Buckets Farm in New Philadelphia in Tuscarawas County joins us. Welcome, Lindsay.
Thank you. Thanks for getting me out of work today.
You're welcome. Lindsay, you were pretty well known in Central Ohio as a journalist before getting into farm. Yes.
All right.
Before getting into farming with your husband, Seth. What inspired you to start Six Buckets Farm? What was the deal there?
Well, we had kind of a conventional introduction into farming. I don't know how much it'll apply to everyone who's listening to here. We had no intention of being hog farmers or farmers in general until we just wanted to live in the country. We were doing that innocently until a pig. We still have no idea where a piglet came from, but it escaped. It adopted us. It stayed on the farm. We tried very hard to find it a new home, but it didn't leave. So we were farmers by force, I guess. We didn't have a choice. And then, unfortunately, we did process the hog. I wish
I
had a happier ending.
As a pet,
I know I always set up this story, and it ends with bacon the same way every time. We missed our pig once it was processed and brought to our table. But we didn't come from farming background. We had no clue what we were doing, but just the fact that we were able to raise this pig, get it to transport it successfully to the processor and get it back home, and then prepare it for a meal at our own table. Like, we were ruined. That's it. Now we're farmers. Now we can't do anything else. Everything else pales in
comparison. How many pigs do you have now?
Today, we fair and finish around 200 a year, which is very small. You raised your eyebrows. It's a big number to you, but it's a small, very small number to most hog farmers that would be starting today. They're in the thousands, so.
Is that right? I mean, do most hog farmers starting today start out with huge?
Conventionally, yes. If you want to start and raise hogs conventionally, then you would need to start. I think the minimum number is like 2,400. I think they start, you have to start getting some special permits at 2,500. So it's like 2,498.
Yeah.
And it's a very expensive barn. So that's the entry level for the way we don't do. We raise them on pasture, so we can start at a smaller, more manageable level.
Okay. About you, Rachel Taze? The name of your company is Foraged and Sown Farm in Central Ohio. How did you get into this?
I came from the more traditional path. I heard the first segment kind of talking about people who wanted to find more authenticity in their food sourcing. I also love to be outside a lot. I was the person in high school who was volunteering with watersheds and, you know, outside bird watching, and that's kind of carried through. And so I started growing plants and plants that I could eat. And soon I was growing kind of more than I could necessarily consume, or I wanted to grow things that I didn't even know how to consume. And so I found in my farm partner, Kate Hodges, someone doing the same thing, looking for flavor. And we grow about 100 varieties of different herbs and berries and tree nuts that aren't mature yet and things like that, both for our families and then for sale.
What's the forage part of it?
So the forage part is that we are interested in wild foods, the things that grow without cultivation. Some of those things cannot be grown. The morel mushroom is kind of the classic example of something that people go out foraging for, and no one has really figured out how to grow that in a reasonable way. So we like bringing those flavors to people and the connection to outdoor spaces and to wild forests and places that we need to preserve. It gives people kind of a real touch point of when they're eating something like nettles, of why it might be important to preserve woodland areas.
How big is your operation? How do you define it?
It is a moving target,
okay.
Whereas Lindsay never knows exactly maybe how many pigs she's going to have within a whole year.
What's being born.
I have yet to have a year where we've been at exactly the same place, the same number of fields at the beginning to the end. So we address urban agriculture and the land issues, access issues within that by farming multiple properties. So my property is 2 acres. Only about a half acre of that is really suitable for planting. So that's what we have there. And at Kate's property, we're at about a quarter of an acre, maybe. And then we have a friend who we rent some land from, and we forage on friends' properties as well.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about beginning farmers, how they get started, why they get started, and what some of the challenges are in their burgeoning careers. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. If you have a question or comment, we'd like to hear from other farmers out there. What do you think about this? Are you among the young farmer movement? Are you a retiring or an older farmer? What do you think about the trends in farming these days? 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Kelly Henderson, two really different descriptions of how they got into farming here, right?
Oh, yeah.
Typical, though?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's really interesting because I can't tell you how many young farmers I talk to who, you know, are a few years out of school. They just graduated. They took a job in the corporate world and they're like, man, this is really boring, you know, and they come to farming because of that. And you just see like all of these various interesting situations, how people come to farming. And I think it speaks to the idea that farming really can and should be considered a profession. You know, I think sometimes we consider farmers just farmers, but really a farmer is more than someone who just comes into it to do the trade, to have their hands in the soil and to be working the land. They're a business person. They have to know marketing. They have to understand financial planning. They have to be a really good communicator. You know, they wear multiple hats, and I think we should be regarding them as professionals as well.
How much does the idea of smaller, the scale of the farms affect all of that? That they have smaller scale farms, like Lindsay Teeter was saying, that a typical startup farm would be 2,400 hogs. They're at 200. I don't know if you want to get bigger or not.
Maybe not. That would ruin our 90 acres for sure if we had 200, 2,000 hogs running around. But with those numbers comes a scale, more mechanization, more technology that we haven't really been able to access or afford, which is part of our name. The farm, you know, six buckets is kind of a way of life for us. It involves a lot of manual labor and a lot of cash flowing until we get, because, you know, you don't really usually start out with big numbers, and you shouldn't, because the learning curve is insane out here. It's so, yeah.
And one of the things that I have seen over and over is people taking on debt to access those high cost items.
That's what I always remind ourselves. Yeah. The only thing scarier than shoveling manure with a fork is like debt service that would be required to buy a skid loader to get it out of there faster. Yep. So
we have also made that like number one priority is
avoid
debt. Yeah.
Ever or
Well, I mean the truth of my farm is that the properties are all owned with mortgages that are not paid by the farm. So we're not including land cost in our farming and feel fortunate to do that. That is all provided by off-farm work, which I'm privileged to enjoy the work that I do off-farm, but I would love to be able to devote more energy to farming, and it just hasn't mathed out in that way.
Only if you want retirement or health care or regular pay.
Security.
You know, those boring things.
Yeah, you know, we heard from Mike Durante from the National Young Farmers Coalition, who said that one of the big issue is this insecurity around the Affordable Care Act, that a lot of farmers are sole proprietors. They're independent, you know, they're independent business owners, and they need something out there like that. Has that been an issue for you, Lindsay?
Well, I'm lucky to be married to a guy with an off-farm job, which is similar for farmers across all sectors.
It's very
conventional,
typical.
Sustainable. Everyone has an off-farm job, unfortunately, to make it work in their household. So, yeah, but that's one of the reasons he can't devote his time the farm, like Rachel said, and we're lucky to have it. But at the same time, wouldn't it be nice if we could work during daylight hours together occasionally?
I also think, too, this idea of land access and healthcare are kind of intertwined. You know, there's been some studies out there that have found, you know, you look at retiring farmers. Well, farmers don't really retire, right? But they certainly are. You know, farming is a risky business, and they're just as likely to have, you know, to have health concerns later in life. And if they don't have good health care to help for maybe long-term care, for instance, they're going to be more likely to sell their land, and they might need the most money for that land, which will not include selling it at an affordable rate for a beginning farmer. So these are all of these issues are so complex and combined, you can't really separate them.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about beginning farmers. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. How is the growth of farmers market come into play for all of this, Kelly Henderson?
That's interesting. You know, we've definitely seen an explosion of farmers markets, which is great, and it also can saturate the market for some growers. So it can make it more difficult for some new farmers to enter into some of those markets if you're not growing, say, a niche crop that's not already being sold there.
Yeah, we were kicked out. Well, not kicked out. We applied to sell at our own in our own county, but there's just those relationships have long been established between the farmers and the market.
And there's just too much competition?
It's impossible to get in. There's waiting lists and, you know.
I think there's a misconception that farmers markets are like
anyone can come, maybe?
Well, and that they're easy to run and they should just be popped up everywhere. But we really need the number of farmers selling and the number of consumers growing at the at equal rates to support ideal farmers markets. So I think in Ohio, there's a lot of rural markets that don't necessarily get the customer base to draw in all the farmers who want to be there. And then in the city, we're seeing more what Kelly's talking about, that there's kind of a saturation of the number of markets and farmers there without the customer base that is supporting them. And so it makes it tricky. Most farms plan to have multiple income streams and can't rely on a farmer's market alone, at least in the Midwest. So they're pursuing wholesale accounts as well, yeah. maybe have a CSA.
A subscription.
A subscription service, yeah. Yeah, of some sort.
Yeah. How do you do it?
I am lazy in many ways when it comes to farmers markets are hard work.
I sold at
two of them and made about $30, which I immediately spent at the farmers right next to me. And you get up at 5 a.m. to pack up everything, you know, and the tote it there and unpack it and set it up. And I wanted to come up with a way to skip that weekly commitment as well. We have young children who have things to do on Saturdays. So we ended up selling shares of our pork. Like about half of our business is to families and individuals who come to us and custom order a pig the way that they would like to eat at their table. And then we're just last year started wholesaling as well to a butcher shop here in Grandview who take two a week now. So those are our two primary methods of selling. We managed to avoid farmers markets.
what about, you know, you, Rachel, how do you manage? How do you sell?
So Forage and Sown is primarily a farmer's market farm, and we're at the Clintonville Farmer's Market weekly Saturdays. It's open at the end of April, the 28th, I believe, this year, all the way through Thanksgiving. And it is hard work, and it's really susceptible to the whims of the customer and the weather. And that actually has, this year we applied for fewer dates at the farmer's market and planning to take July and August to really focus on harvesting things for value-added processing. So we take our herbs and berries that don't sell or some that we specifically grow for this purpose, and we make them into tea blends and jams and things like that, which can sit on the shelf longer.
Okay.
So the challenge of a vegetable farmer is that, or a fruit farmer, is that we have produce that will expire relatively quickly, especially if we don't have access to preservation methods, even refrigeration. You know, at a small scale, a lot of people are deciding whether they want to invest in a refrigerator or a truck, you know, and to get their things to market. So that kind of processing is really important, thinking about no waste so that we're not composting any food, but there's a way to sell it later.
We'll continue our conversation about the challenges of young and new farmers, the ones they face in these days. My guest, you just heard from Rachel Tays. She's a farmer at Foraged and Sown Farm in Central Ohio. Also with us, Lindsay Teeter of Four Buckets.
I lost two buckets in that.
Six buckets. Did I say four buckets? Lindsay Teeter of Six Buckets. Sorry, just take a bucket. There she is. Of Six Buckets Farm in New Philadelphia in Tuscarawas County. And also with us, Kelly Henderson. She's the Begin Farming Program Coordinator for the Ohio Ecological Food and Farm Association. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the challenges for new farmers today. Still with us is Begin Farming Program Coordinator for the Ohio Ecological Food and Farm Association, Kelly Henderson. They have their 39th annual conference coming up later this month. For more information on that, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org. A focus of the conference is the issues facing young farmers. Also with us, Rachel Tays of Foraged and Sown Farm and Lindsay Teeter from Six Buckets Farm in New Philadelphia and Tuscarawas County. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, Lindsay Teeter, another thing you did when you left Columbus for the country is you just started a family as well. You procreated.
It's guilty as charged. I know. I don't know how this keeps happening.
Wow. And you're going to be presenting at the conference. I thought this was interesting. I didn't know this until I was looking at the until recently that you're going to be presenting about raising a farm family.
I am going to pretend to know what I'm talking about
for like, you're
what,
doing
20
it.
Minutes? Yeah,
you're
I know.
Doing it.
I know.
You know something.
I'm winging it. We're all winging it. Yeah, that's true.
What's it like?
The kids seem to enjoy it. Yeah, yeah. I'll look up from whatever drudgery of the day is, and they've built a fort out of straw and sticks or buried themselves in a pile of straw. No one has been hurt yet, knock on wood.
Yeah.
And they have instincts that are strong as the animals that we are raising. Mm. I tell the story of my, I was checking sows with my kids. You're not supposed to do that. But one of them came charging at another sow who had gotten too close. And the problem sow was standing very close to me. So I thought that was it. That was the end for me. But the kids were already halfway up the hill by the time I figured out what was going on. They know when a sow is upset. They heard her grunts. They watched her posture, and they have been trained by safely observing them to get the heck out of there at the first sign of trouble.
Uh-huh.
So it's just crazy to me coming from, you know, I have no farming knowledge or background growing up, and just these little girls that already know more than half the adults in Ohio hanging out with us.
What about you, Rachel Tace?
Yeah, it was interesting. I was at another conference and heard somebody talking about what we really need is people to have an education in taste, because when people taste things that are like real and strong from the ground, all of a sudden, like that tomato that was grown hydroponically halfway across the world and shipped here is just not appealing. And I have a 12-year-old daughter, and my farm partner has a 9-year-old son. And the two of them, man, they eat the wildest things. And it's studies show that wild foods and strongly flavored foods are so good for you. And these kids are growing up
You've
knowing
them.
That.
Yeah,
they're ruined. I mean, my daughter runs around and grabs wild chives and puts them in her mouth like they're a mustache costume, and then she eats them up and like reeks of chive smell. But I know that like that is so much better for her than if I was going to force feed her peeled baby carrots or something. You know, she's loving it.
So I'm curious to both of you, since we're talking about new farmers, do you think any of your children have an interest in farming?
I wonder what's going to happen when they turn 18. I think they might just move to Chicago and never. I wonder that, because I do worry that we work so much we can't. It's a huge ordeal to take. We took a 3-day vacation to New Jersey Beach because it was like direct line, the closest vacation, you know, beach to our farm. I worry that they're going to burn out. But I feel like even if they do, they'll be equipped with skills that will make them successful wherever they end up.
Kelly Henderson, did you grow up on a farm?
I grew up one generation removed. So my grandparents have a farm in southwestern Ohio. And it's really interesting because my mom, she's a horticulturalist. And when I was growing up, you know, I never went to daycare. I went to work with my mom and sat in the dirt while she worked. And I always had people asking me, like, oh, so you're gonna grow up and work with plants and be a farmer. And I was like, no, absolutely not. And here I am, you know, 31 in the process of planning to move eventually back to the farm with my parents and start farming. So, you know, it's interesting how maybe later they'll come back and appreciate some of those experiences and who knows.
Yeah, I married into farming families on both sides of his family, and I was talking to a cousin over the weekend, and they have 4 kids, and they think one of them will want to get into the farming end of it.
It does get in your blood, I think.
When you have that many kids, you know, the odds are better that maybe one of them might get into it. But the challenges remain. I mean, we talked earlier with Mike Durante about even for families that want to leave the property, they may not be able to. They may not be able to afford it.
Yeah, yeah. And they might also not have a plan in place to do that because they've never thought about that.
Yeah.
So I think it's just as important to make sure that those not just the farmers, but the people who are advising farmers, who are working with farmers, you know about these other options when they're working with them in farm succession planning to ensure that whoever does want to take over the farm has access to that.
Yeah, and there's I know some farm families in transition and who've accessed some really great programs that can help with that. Ohio went through a whole CAUV, which is a agricultural taxation reform, which helped because families were getting hit with 100%, 200%, 300% increases in their property taxes, which once the property's paid off, those taxes have to be covered by someone. Mm-hmm. And if you're farming, that could become a big cost. So I think that the trend, that reform helped a lot of families, and trending towards acknowledging the cost of property is an important part of the land access piece. And then the conservation piece. A lot of families are wanting to put their land into conservation, which doesn't mean that it can't be used for agriculture, but that maybe it isn't as readily developed.
Because there's restrictions on what you can do to it.
Restrictions, or in some cases, the USDA has programs that actually incentivize farmers to help restore areas or take care of wetlands rather than trying to like tile and plant on them. Mm-hmm. The Conservation Resource Program is one of those, among others, that I think help bridge that gap between those who really want to maintain their land in an agricultural sense and the economic realities of what it costs to retire and raise families and things like that.
And we also have an upcoming event on February 14th, so just next week before our conference, in conjunction with the National Young Farmers Coalition. They're leading a training that is specifically geared towards land trusts and other conservation professionals who might be working with farmers, and bringing in various examples from across the country to show them, you know, how to make some of these programs work for the farmers that they're working with on a day-to-day basis. So we are still accepting registrations for that, shameless plug here, but that could be an opportunity for us to expand efforts as well if more people are aware of it and using those tools.
Mm-hmm. We talked earlier before you guys came on about getting advice and kind of hooking up older farmers, experienced farmers with younger farmers. And Lindsay Teeter, I know you guys kind of fell into this with the lost piglet that adopted you guys and then that you had butchered later.
But right. Heartlessly.
But did you sit down and do a business plan? Did you go out and seek advice from
any day now? We are going to sit tomorrow. You know what? You've inspired me. We're going to start thinking about this. No, we.
You're very typical if that's the case, right? I mean, more people than not.
No, yeah, you don't have time to do that when the animals have needs that need to be met. No, we that is a problem for beginning farmers. There's not a big beginning farmers school. A lot of the ways that we farm, the majority of farmers do not use any of those methods. So we have embraced our lack of knowledge because we don't know what has always been done. So we can take risks without even knowing that they're risks that we are taking.
I would think
we don't subscribe to certain. Right.
If you knew so many of the challenges, you might not get into it.
We would have run away. No, if you enjoy overcoming challenges, man, you should definitely. It's like a daily thing. I don't know about for you guys, mm-hmm. but it's like a high. I get bored very easily, and you just never know what type of challenge you're going to be YouTubing by the end of the day.
I follow you on Facebook, of course, and I'm sometimes worried if you don't post on a regular basis because I'm wondering what
my
tragedy
mother
has befallen.
Does the same. I can't let 4 hours go by without. I haven't been eaten yet. Yeah,
one of the kids fall into the sty kind of thing.
We're winging it. I don't think that's the official answer on the record, but that's the truth.
Okay. Well, it's a really hard thing to do, to plan a business that is so so susceptible to climate change and
how much rain
consumers. Yeah, rain. I mean, you can't. It's really hard to predict when you can put a seed in the ground, or when it's safe to, you know, run out of straw so that the pigs can be outside, or when the pasture is going to regreen. Like, that can be
notoriously bad, I think, beginning farmers at knowing what our costs are.
Oh, yeah.
So we can't set our prices appropriately, because it is a 5-10 year process, knowing, you know, collecting costs for a sow, for a piglet, and those costs are always evolving and changing.
And for vegetable farmers, a lot of that is about knowing your land, and that's where land tenure becomes really important. I've been on my property for 5 years. I can predict relatively accurately now where the wet spots are, where I should plant things that like drier areas, or like more rain or less sun or whatever. But I didn't know that in my first couple of years. And one of the challenges is, if you're renting land, is learning that and figuring out how you're going to adapt to that, and then having a lease expire, or someone changes their mind, or there's a challenge otherwise. It can just take a lot.
Familiar issues?
Yeah. You know, I think, too, one thing I try to encourage, at least for aspiring farmers who can, go work on a farm, go work on many farms, and learn from the farmers, because ultimately that's going to be your best opportunity to really get those skills and then, you know, decide, is this right for me or not? I think having your feet on the ground is really important. And then, you know, also, if you decide you do want to farm, find those farmers that you want to learn from and, you know, take them up as mentors. You know, you really want to engage with experienced farmers who have been through those things and can offer that advice. And
are farmers up for being mentors? Is it that easy to find someone?
No, you're going
I get
to
asked
have to
like,
illegally
all the time.
Enter their property and follow them around, because it's hard to throw someone into a system that you've just, you know, adjusted today. So it's really tricky. But at the same time, if you're, you know, we need help, we need labor. So farmers are, I think, more willing to invite that help onto their land.
And we're launching a mentorship program this year to match mentees and mentors. And I think part of that is compensating farmers for their time, because they, you know, already don't have much time. So I think that's an important thing, too, is if we can, at least on an organizational end, build programs that support these types of relationships, that's really important.
Well, no, I was talking about the USDA statistics that there are not enough farmers to replace the outgoing farmers. Is that as true in Ohio as it is everywhere else?
Yeah, and it's terrifying.
I'm not terrified. I think we won't. I mean, isn't that the trend? We only need like one drone in China to like grow all the food that we eat. Like that. I don't think we're going to need people. And that's not terrifying, but it's really sad. Like, it's really like, I don't know, we're missing out on
the culture.
The culture, the American farmer, the autonomy, the innovation, the creativity. It's just, we're kind of being handed something different. Grow your own pig kits.
Well, I grew.
Hand it out. I don't know.
I mean, we can't
sad.
All have little piglets running around our property.
You should try one.
Yeah.
I know. I gotta be careful who I push this on, but
yeah, exactly.
It's life changing.
Well, I want to thank you all for joining us, Lindsay Teeter from Six Buckets Farm in Tuscarawas County. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks
glad
for
to give
having
you a day
me.
Off,
I know.
At least
Let's
a
do
morning
this
off.
Every day.
Okay. And also Rachel Taze from Foraged and Sown Farm here in Central Ohio. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
And Kelly Henderson, the Begin Farming Program Coordinator for the Ohio Ecological Food and Farm Association. Thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
And by the way, the Ohio Ecological Food and Farm Association's 39th annual conference is coming up. If you want to learn more about that, one of the primary focus is on young farmers. Check out the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. And thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.